ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Friday, the 14th of November. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, asbestos found in rainbow-coloured kids' play sand, schools closed and retailers issue a nationwide recall. And liftoff for Blue Origin. Amazon's Jeff Bezos launches a landmark mission to Mars.
As far as I can tell, an absolutely flawless launch. The first stage came back and landed on a barge. The second stage went into space, deployed all its spacecraft, and everybody is jumping up and down and partying.
Federal Liberal MPs are beginning talks with the National Party today to thrash out a joint coalition energy policy. The Liberals' compromise threatens the few remaining Liberal moderates' inner city seats, with critics pointing out the apparent contradiction of sticking with the Paris Agreement but dumping net zero by 2050. The party hopes a coalition joint party room meeting on Sunday will settle the issue, as Tanya Dendrinos reports.
It's being described as a compromise climate policy, the Liberal Party agreeing to ditch net zero emissions by 2050, but still support Australia's commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement. Climate Change Minister Chris Bowen, who's set to go to Brazil next week for the UN's COP Climate Summit, today reacted to the announcement.
What we saw yesterday was a blancmange of contradictory, internally inconsistent statements and claims. All an alibi to avoid action on the greatest environmental challenge and economic opportunity of our time.
Opposition leader Susan Lee has spent the past 24 hours selling her party's policy change, saying the decision is about responsibly reducing emissions.
We welcome net zero if technology allows us to get there, and we've made that point. But our priority is affordable energy for households, and we're not in the business of long-term targets as Labor is, because remember this, if you build an energy policy based on a target that can't be reached many, many years hence, you will get the results that unfortunately we're seeing around us now.
Dan Tehan, the Shadow Minister for Energy and Emissions Reduction, attempted to explain how cheaper energy prices would be achieved through Liberal policy.
We'll get more supply into the system and we'll get more supply into the system quicker. And we will prioritise all technologies, all types of supply of getting that into the system.
But he acknowledges it isn't the federal government footing the bill for extending the life of ageing coal-fired power stations.
Obviously, what is occurring now is it's business and state government, state Labor governments in Victoria and New South Wales. And when it comes to gas, obviously the South Australian Labor government. And what we have said is we would support existing generation with modest targeted underwriting, like what is occurring with wind and solar at the moment.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese agrees bringing down power prices must be a priority and says it's the reason his government has introduced energy rebates, but argues the coalition has been part of the problem.
The cheapest form of new energy is renewables, and we know that. One of the reasons why what we inherited is taking time to fix is that nothing happened. There was no new energy coming online.
Amandine Dennis-Ryan is the Australia CEO of the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. She says the coalition's proposals are full of contradictions.
Obviously, we would agree with a focus on energy affordability while reducing emissions. But at the moment, the coalition discards or ignores the largest opportunities to reduce energy costs, such as fixing inefficient markets and regulation, energy efficiency, residential electrification and renewables.
As for whether the Liberal Party can successfully sell its policy to voters at the next election, former Liberal Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull isn't convinced.
They're sending a message to most Australians that they do not take climate change seriously. They are guaranteeing that they will marginalise their vote.
Dr. Jill Shepherd is an associate professor in politics at the Australian National University. She agrees voters who are concerned about climate change won't be convinced by the Liberal policy, but doesn't believe it will significantly shift votes.
Maybe it will shift some Conservative voters to the Liberals, and maybe it will lose some progressive, moderate-leaning Liberal voters to the Teals or back to Labor. But I think in net terms, it's probably a wash electorally.
Representatives from the Liberal and National parties are now working to agree on a shared coalition position ahead of a joint party room meeting on Sunday.
Tanya Dendrinos. Schools have been suddenly closed in Canberra today with asbestos discovered in rainbow-coloured kids' play sand. One school is so far confirmed to be shut in Queensland. Investigations are continuing into the play sand, which was sold to the public across Australia since 2020, with authorities urging parents to avoid exposure and to carefully dispose of any affected products. Here's Diana Damjanovic.
It was an unusually quiet school drop-off at Lyons in Canberra's southern suburbs this morning. The culprit, decorative coloured sand.
I got a text message about it from the school, and then I got, and actually went around the WhatsApp group as well. We have a really good WhatsApp group at school.
This parent says he's not overly concerned after dozens of schools in Canberra were shut today or partially closed over asbestos traces found in tubs of sand.
Look, it is what it is, I think. These things happen. I'm not overly concerned, I think. Look, I've probably been exposed to more asbestos in my life than she has, but it is a dangerous stuff, so I get it.
More concerned is Liani. She's a parent of a 9-year-old boy at a special needs school in Holt. She says she wants more information about what exposure to chrysotile asbestos does to the body.
Not so much the risk of exposure, but more so lack of information of what impact that might have, how much of exposure would have occurred during interaction with the product. But also because of the nature of our kids, they are very sensory seeking, and a large number of families probably own that product themselves at home.
Earlier this week, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission issued a recall notice for three coloured sand products: Kadink Sand, Educational Colours Rainbow Sand, and Createistics Coloured Sand. These sand products are used in some public schools for sensory play and arts and crafts. ACCC Deputy Chair Katrina Lowe says the product recall is being done as a precaution.
So we are warning consumers to check whether they have these products in their home and to cease to use them if they do, and to take careful steps in relation to disposal.
Authorities say the coloured sand imported from China and available Australia-wide has been for sale for about 5 years at dozens of stores, including Woolworths and Officeworks. It's not known whether it contained asbestos for that entire period. But there are asbestos tests happening around the country. The ACT WorkSafe Commissioner Jackie Agus says so far the concern is low.
Asbestos in sand is a naturally occurring substance because it comes from quartz and it's quite heavy. And so when asbestos is heavy, then it's difficult to breathe it in. So that's why we say the risk is low.
The sand can be used across a school setting, out on trays and desks, as well as outside. Jackie Agus says testing for asbestos fibres in the air in the ACT has returned hopeful results.
I have been advised by the Education Directorate this morning that overnight they conducted air monitoring testing. There were 8 test results back early this morning, and all 8 test results were negative for airborne fibres. The risk to our children and our community is low according to the test results that we currently have.
The ACT Education Minister, Yvette Berry, says the schools have been closed out of an abundance of caution to ensure any decorative sand still lying around can be removed safely. The ACT government says remediation works at schools will be underway across the weekend, with the aim to have the schools reopened by Monday.
Diana Damjanovic. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Overseas now, and Sudan is the world's largest humanitarian crisis. But its civil war is being fueled by weapons flown in from other countries. Overnight, US Secretary of State Marco Rubio called for international action to cut off the supply of arms. Weapons investigators say the United Arab Emirates is giving guns to the paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces. The UAE denies it. Here's Nicole Johnston.
There was hope a ceasefire in Sudan would lead to an end to the war, but it is fading fast. There is no agreement, and a killing spree in the city of El Fasher by a paramilitary called the Rapid Support Forces has not stopped. Alex DeWall is one of the world's leading experts on Sudan. He's from Tufts University in Boston.
There is no ceasefire. The RSF declared that it was prepared to cease fire, but it has continued its attacks. Its drones are attacking other cities. And the other side, the Sudan Armed Forces, has vowed revenge.
Satellite images indicate the Rapid Support Forces have killed thousands of people. Experts say it's at a rate on par with the genocide in Rwanda in 1994. The massacres have turned the spotlight on another country accused of fueling this war, the United Arab Emirates.
The UAE has a long-standing relationship with General Mohammed Hamdan, known as Hemeti, who heads the Rapid Support Forces. But they also seem to be flying their equipment directly to cities that are controlled by the RSF.
What are the repercussions of this war and implosion inside Sudan for the rest of the region?
So what we're seeing is really the complete collapse of Sudan as a viable state, and countries next door like Libya and above all Egypt really cannot face the strain of these people flooding across their border.
The United Arab Emirates, or UAE, denies that it's involved, but Mike Lewis, who investigated arms shipments to Sudan for the UN, says there is no doubt it is.
So we know that the Rapid Support Forces have been resupplied by ostensibly private actors, private air cargo companies, mercenary fighters and weapons moving overland. And we know that the mercenaries that have been fighting with the RSF in Darfur particularly, who come from Colombia and other countries, those mercenaries have been recruited through Emirati companies that are very close to the government. So it's absolutely an open secret that the UAE, at the highest levels of the UAE government, are involved in supporting this force.
US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has called for international action to stop the flow of weapons, but he did not publicly criticise the UAE.
I think something needs to be done to cut off the weapons and the support that the RSF is getting as they continue with their advances. I think it's telling, you know, the humanitarian groups are telling us that some of the levels of malnutrition and suffering that they're seeing from some of these people who have been able to flee is unprecedented.
As for peace talks, the United Arab Emirates is involved here as well, along with the US, Saudi Arabia and Egypt. But no agreement has been reached, and so the war and the killing continues.
Nicole Johnston. Back home, and the neo-Nazi group, the National Socialist Network, who rallied outside the New South Wales Parliament last weekend, are planning to register as a political party. The group held a banner saying abolish the Jewish lobby, and one attendee was stood down by his employer, Sydney Trains, in the wake of the protest. For more, I spoke with the ABC Verify's Matt Martino. Matt, what can you tell us about some of the men involved in last weekend's rally?
The National Socialist Network is a white supremacist neo-Nazi group in Australia. They advocate for a white ethno-nationalist state in the country and want to see those of non-European descent deported to ostensibly their country of origin. Yesterday, we revealed the identities of some of those men because they appeared unmasked at the rally, and that allowed us to connect their faces to their lives on social media. One of those men was Matthew Gruter, who moved here from South Africa in 2022, at the time on a visa which required him to be sponsored by a business. It looks like he was working as a senior civil engineer for engineering and design firm Oricon. So he doesn't fit the typical romper stomper skinhead mold of a Nazi that people might think of.
What does this research tell us about some of the motivations of those involved in the neo-Nazi movement, and more broadly, why we're seeing it grow?
Well, there's definitely a trend towards recruiting more people like Matthew Gruter. They might be more affluent and have stable jobs and families. They project success in their careers, and that might encourage others like them to join the movement. So we're seeing a deliberate recruitment strategy play out, but also these groups crave media attention because it's free advertising for them. Joshua Roos is an expert in far-right extremism from Deakin University, and he says they deliberately attach themselves to causes like immigration, which is a big issue in Australia in some sections of the community right now, and they use those issues to further their goals.
The NSN are a group that are strategic. They identify causes, attach themselves to them in a quite parasitical way and attempt to reframe those debates as the reason for a white ethnostate, violent mass deportations and so on. This is a group that is really attempting to enact the National Socialist playbook. They draw direct inspiration from the actions of Hitler and the formation of the National Socialist Party, which it's worth noting came to power through the ballot box. And so to that extent, this ties into their broader long-term strategy.
Deakin University's Dr. Josh Roos there. Matt, prominent neo-Nazi leader Thomas Sowell was released from prison yesterday. Could this strengthen the movement?
Well, I think we have to ask the question, did putting Thomas Sowell in jail ever weaken the movement? And I'd argue that it didn't. So I don't think him being released will strengthen it in any way. And that's because these men, when they're sent to jail, they spin it to their supporters and potential supporters as political persecution, and they put aside any charges or transgressions. They say that they're having their speech limited. And that's not to say we shouldn't follow the letter of the law and prosecute alleged crimes. It's only to say that the problem won't necessarily go away if these men are put in jail.
ABC Verify's Matt Martino. Black Friday, Black November, Black Sales. It's a bit like a Rolling Stones song at this time of year with everything painted black. But what began as a push from US retailers to stimulate pre-holiday sales now seems to completely take over your feeds and inbox here in Australia, with offers promising you a cheaper Christmas shop. But this week, the ACCC announced it's monitoring for dodgy sales tactics and ways that you can dob in deceptive or misleading offers. Jeannie Patterson is a professor of law at the University of Melbourne Law School, and she joined me earlier. Professor, the ACCC fined three retailers for allegedly misleading customers in last year's Black Friday sales over the misuse of this phrase, store-wide sales. What is this trick that they're pulling?
Well, there's a number of tricks we see at sales time, and one of them is to put in large letters on the social media feed a 60 or 80% discount, a large discount. But when you get to the store, there's either no items with that discount or only very few items. And that's misleading because customers are going to the site in the hope of good bargains, which aren't available. But often the idea is that the customers will then linger on the site and buy something else, even though they're not getting a sale price.
And there's some very kind of, deceptive psychology when it comes to putting an item in your cart and then finding out later that it's not marked down. You find that consumers still continue to shop even though they've been tricked into putting things in their carts?
Yeah, it's called deceptive design or dark patterns, to continue the dark theme, which is where marketers use strategies to manipulate consumers into making purchases by relying on behavioural traits. Like once you've committed to the product, you tend to go ahead with the purchase. Or if you're in a state of excitement or anxiety about getting the product, you go ahead with the purchase. So that's why we see those countdown clocks as well, sometimes on sales sites. You've only got 5 minutes or 3 minutes or 2 minutes to buy this.
So that's that sort of false urgency tactic. What about price manipulation practices? Is it true that some retailers will increase their prices only to reduce them and then advertise on the back of it?
Unfortunately, there's been a number of illustrations of retailers who just before a sale increase the product by just the amount of the subsequent discount. So they put the product up by, say, 10% in the week before the sale. They offer then a 10% discount. So really, the customer's getting nothing. That's a particularly nasty strategy, actually.
So in terms of regulatory frameworks, are consumer protections robust enough?
We have good consumer protection. I guess the problem that we do have is a lot of these Black Friday sales, as you mentioned, are fueled by overseas companies. A lot of people are shopping online. It is harder to enforce Australian law against overseas retailers. If you sell products in Australia, the Australian consumer law applies to that sale. If the company is not based in Australia, it's just really difficult for Australian regulators to enforce our laws.
As always in these conversations, it's all about reading the fine print. But who has the time, Jeannie? I mean, you know, especially when you're trying to get your Christmas shopping done, do you find that these sort of nefarious practices happen in the smallest possible print at the bottom of the webpage?
Yeah, absolutely. We do have good law, but consumers still should protect their own interests by just take a breath before you rush into a sales purchase, particularly at this time before Christmas. You know, we're rushing to get a Christmas deal. Just check whether it is a deal. It's usually a good idea before going to the sales to have a think about what you actually need. Maybe look at the product on other sites, just so you have a feel for what the appropriate pricing is. And I'd add there's quite a few scams around at the moment as well, of course, where large discounts or closing down sales are advertised for shops that don't even exist. So I think people just need to be careful online and just take care, just slow down, have a think before you buy.
Professor Patterson is from the University of Melbourne Law School. Great to talk to you this afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, no one loves a long-haul flight, but spare a thought for two rockets who have this morning begun a 22-month journey to the red planet, Mars. After days of delays, Blue Origin, the space venture of Amazon billionaire Jeff Bezos, has successfully launched a giant rocket from Florida with a pair of NASA spacecraft hitching a ride to Mars. So what's the point of going to Mars? And is it practical to have a battle of the billionaires to conquer the solar system? Elizabeth Cramsey has the story.
Autopilot enabled.
At Cape Canaveral in Florida, ground crew held their breath for launch.
T-minus 10, 9... 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And just like that, Blue Origin's 98-metre-tall New Glenn rocket was on its way.
Take motion.
Pitching a ride were two NASA spacecraft.
NASA got a discount on a launching of two Escapade, that's the name, spacecraft, which are going to eventually end up in orbit around Mars to study its atmosphere.
Keith Cowing used to work at NASA and is now the editor of NASAWatch.com.
They were, this was sort of the prime payload for NASA. Everything else was something that Blue Origin had done for itself or for some other customers. And those two Escapade spacecraft are happily in their little orbit and they'll make their way to Mars.
The project has a number of objectives. Two of them were achieved almost immediately.
As far as technology, they get gold star for today. I mean, it was just, everything was perfect. Other than a few delays up front, when they launched the rocket, it just did its thing. It landed perfectly on the barge. It launched its satellites where it needed to go. Not a problem that I could identify. So that is impressive. So any company that, it may have taken them a little longer to do this, but they've in essence accomplished something that in some ways SpaceX hasn't actually done yet.
Space weather conditions caused launch delays for several days, and that's exactly what the two NASA satellites, dubbed Blue and Gold, will spend 11 months studying.
They're going to study the ionosphere and how the sun affects Mars' atmosphere and how it used to be a lot thicker and got worn away. So space weather had an impact on when this was launched, and these two spacecraft are going to Mars to study the space weather at Mars.
Andrew Yusinski is a space industry expert based in Queensland. He says Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin, is giving Elon Musk's SpaceX some fierce competition in the private space sector.
This is a rocket that has been launched that is the similar size of the Falcon 9 rocket that SpaceX has been having as its flagship vehicle for many years. This is a really great thing for the industry as a whole because it means that there'll be much more access and availability.
He says while it might seem to be a battle of the billionaires who could pool resources to achieve the common goal, one company's success is success for everyone.
These missions are using, you know, next generation engines and technologies that are really something that a lot of people in the industry are now getting that flight validation, which is a really key important thing to make sure that other companies and other people in the industry are putting their resources. They're able to see this as a win, not just for Blue Origin, but also for the next edge of technological advancement in rocket development.
Space industry expert Andrew Usinski, ending that report by Elizabeth Cramsey and Alison Shaw. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. How is it that a neo-Nazi rally targeting Jewish people was allowed to take place on the steps of the New South Wales Parliament? Today, extremism expert Josh Roos explains what's going on with the neo-Nazi groups and why they now need to be banned. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.